I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition, and this is Vermont Public's election night coverage live this hour and later into the evening. I'm Connor Cyrus.
And I'm Michaela LaFrac. Tonight, we'll be bringing you election results as they roll in. We'll hear from voters across the state about what motivated them to vote in today's primary. And we'll keep you updated on one of the most watched primary races Vermont has seen in years, the contest to be the next Democratic nominee for the state's only seat in the U.S. House.
We'll speak with reporters at campaign events tonight from both Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray and Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant. And in a little bit, we'll be joined by Vermont Public senior political reporter Bob Kinzel.
But first, let's hear from some voters. Polls closed just minutes ago across Vermont, and Vermont Public reporters have been out all day talking to voters, poll workers, and people who voted early.
So let's go first to the Northeast Kingdom, where Vermont Public's Erica Heilman spoke with Roger Brown, who lives in Essex County. He's worried about the cost of living and government overreach.
What are the issues you're worried about, concerned about,
thoughtful
about right now?
Oh, goodness, the inflation, I don't know, the border. I've got a cousin, they're elderly, they're disabled. They don't know what they're going to do, how they're going to heat the house this year. They're going to have to cut up back on food, and then they're not sure how they're going to balance that. I'm going to have to help them, I think, yeah.
You're talking about somebody in Vermont?
Yes. Yeah, they live in East Concord.
On a state level, what are you most thoughtful about?
I think there's too much government overreach on a lot of issues. You name it, and there's some rule or regulation over it. So watch this guy here. Have a good time, folks. Take care. Good to see you. Yeah, my neighbors.
Reporter Erica Heilman also spoke with Abby Pollander of St. Johnsbury. Pollander says being a part of a tight-knit community in Vermont is what gets her to the polls.
So we're standing outside the voting place in St. Johnsbury, right in front of a very loud bus. Why did you come out today?
Oh, I always vote, in primaries especially. I think it's important. I think it sort of sets us up for the general election, and I don't miss a chance to vote, and I care about who my candidates are in the general election.
And what are the issues you think are most front of mind for you?
I think for primaries, I think it's in reading about them and learning about them and who's approachable to me. I mean, we're in a small enough place in Vermont where I can call somebody and say, you know, this is what I think. Why did you vote this way? Or how will you vote on that? And it's small enough that we can have that kind of contact with our candidates. So for me, it's almost more about them being approachable, agreeing with them on issues. I don't have to agree with them on every issue, but just knowing that they represent me well.
What would you say that you're most worried about, or what keeps you up at night?
The thing that keeps me up at night the most, how much am I responsible for, and what can I do to make things better and different, and how much effect can I have? That's what keeps me up at night the most, I think. But certainly climate change is a big one for me. Reproductive rights. You know, I think sometimes we're taking a step backwards in some of this. My daughters may have fewer rights than I had in some ways, and that makes me scared.
Some voters told us they're most excited about the prospect of Vermont sending a woman to Washington for the first time. Vermont is the only state to have never elected a woman to the U.S. House or Senate. Now, many of the leading Democratic and Republican candidates for Vermont's House seat this year are women. And here is reporter Henry Epp speaking with Huda Musanovic of South Burlington about it.
I would like to vote for change. We want to send women to Congress this time. It's time for Vermont to send women over there. And that's my main reason that why I want to vote.
Are there certain issues that are motivating you to vote?
A lot of them. We want more diversity. We want our voices to be heard. And we want to change.
Speaking at the polls at Georgia Elementary and Middle School today, Lauren Thomas said her two children and women's rights got her out to vote.
I'm out voting today to protect women. I'm a mom, I'm an educator, and I'm here to protect all. I want to vote out those that want to keep marginalizing groups and to protect the freedoms that women deserve in this country.
You're emotional.
Yeah, I am. I feel under attack. I feel we're going in the wrong direction.
Rutland resident John Wing told us he's frustrated by the political ads this year, which he says don't tell him what he wants to know.
With all the advertising I've received via mail and stuff, a lot of the candidates did not identify themselves as Republican, Democrat, or progressive. I find that misleading. And not much information on any of that stuff. You kind of got to do your own. And if you're not even if you're watching TV, you're not finding out much about the candidates, in my opinion.
Charles Bjorklund and Susan Aiken have been St. Johnsbury residents for more than 40 years, but they're feeling so frustrated with politics that they're selling their house and leaving Vermont. Here they are speaking with reporter Erica Heilman.
Okay, so you are diehards. You come out for every vote. What do you think, what are the high stakes right now that you're thinking about?
Getting rid of the Democrats.
Okay, this country is in disarray.
Yes, especially.
The Republic is in danger. And it is true, right? What happened last night at Mar-a-Lago, unprecedented. It has never happened to a sitting president or a former president ever until Donald Trump took office. And it's not Donald Trump I'm worried about. It's this country.
It's us.
The country has gone.
It's us.
It's just wrong. And it's wrong because it's not the American way. There's a constitution. The FBI and the judicial system do not run this country. And that's what's happening now.
So your biggest feeling coming out today, even though you come out every time, what you're worried about is the fate of the democracy.
The fate
of the Republic.
US.
It's different. Democracy is different than the Republic. We live in a republic, a representative government, and that is failing.
And we are leaving. Our house is for sale.
You are leaving Vermont to hit Iowa or
South Dakota
or Tennessee.
Because of the politics.
And we are going. We're going to deliverance country. Not for any reason.
But some voters say they find hope in the passing of leadership from established politicians like retiring Senator Patrick Leahy to a new generation. Here's 27-year-old Emily Kearden after voting in Bellows Falls early this morning.
It's totally cool to have older people. We just have a lot of older people. And when I'm looking at, you know, the faces in the Senate and in Congress, they don't look anything like me. They don't look about my age. So I think it's important to get younger people in there.
Brattleboro voter Jim Nicholson said he's feeling hopeful that the parties can work together towards common goals.
We got to figure it out. We got to be able to talk to each other, listen to each other. I think is the most important thing, just to be able to like take a minute and listen to what people are saying. It just seems like everyone's so polarized right now, it's difficult for that to happen.
And of course, Election Day doesn't happen without the many volunteers giving their time at poll places across the state. I spent most of today in Montpelier talking to voters as they came and went from City Hall. And that's where I met Valerie Lewis, who's been volunteering as an election worker for almost 20 years. I asked her why she does it.
I think it's really the importance of people being involved in government, in our democracy, which right now is under fire. So I'm definitely going to be here this year helping out. And it's a way to give back to the community and a way to be a participant in, our lives.
How do you motivate a younger generation of people to get involved in this process and hopefully do it for as many years as you've done it?
Well, we have had some people in the past, last time around, But I think it's important to get them to understand that this is their future. I've been doing this for 18 years. I'm older. I'm retired. It's really their future that depends upon people voting, and it depends upon their involvement. They shape their future. We've kind of shaped ours as we've gone along, but it's really important because what is decided here is going to determine their lives and their children's lives. And it all starts here, right at the local level.
That was Valerie Lewis, an election poll worker in Montpelier who's been volunteering for nearly 20 years. She also told me that she's not quite ready to hang up her volunteer hat, but she will be when a new generation of Vermonters wants to take on the work.
And thank you to all of the Vermonters who spoke to our reporters today. Connor, it's been so great just these like past 20 minutes hearing from people all across the state. You can like feel the excitement that people have about being part of this democratic process.
Exactly. And it's just so fun. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be able to talk to some of these people, and there's hope, you know, and I think that there is inspiration for people to really feel like they can take control of the democratic process and do their civic duty. I spoke to a lot of people in Montpelier, and they said that they don't feel that democracy is under attack here in Vermont, but they are worried about that in other places. So I think that there's that hope that we might be small, but we're mighty.
I totally agree. I also love just seeing the I voted stickers everywhere.
Oh, you already know that I'm obsessed with those stickers and all the Facebook posts.
This evening, we're bringing you special election night coverage as we're watching races from around the state. We're going to check in with reporters at Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray's campaign and State Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant.
And but before we do that, we're joined this hour and until 10 o'clock tonight by our senior political correspondent, Bob Kinzel. Bob, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hey, great to be here.
Do you have the popcorn and the coffee ready?
I think it's popcorn and chocolate.
Oh, all right. We're using chocolate to stay up.
That's a classic Bob Kinzel move. So, Bob, obviously we're still waiting for results to come in tonight. But as we wait, let's take a look at voter turnout. You've been telling us ahead of tonight that all the elements have seemed to be in place for really good turnout. What are those elements?
Well, Michaela, if there was ever a year for good turnout, this is it, because election officials say that contested races generally drive turnout. When you don't have contested races, nobody really cares, so they don't come to the polls, and the opposite is true. This is such an unusual year in Vermont. Of our 8 statewide offices, including the 2 federal offices, of those 8, we have 6 offices where there are no incumbents seeking re-election, only 2 where there are, and that's the governor's office and the auditor's office. So we've got lots of people running for different offices, and generally, I think people who are interested in politics and in participating in politics will tell you that running against an incumbent is a pretty tough thing to do. It's hard to raise money. They've got name recognition. The time you run is when the seat is vacant. And that's what we're seeing this year. You know, I think of it as the Pat Leahy effect. When Senator Leahy announced in November that he would not be seeking another term in the U.S. Senate, that opened up that Senate seat. Now, he's been there for 48 years. So if you're interested in serving in the U.S. Senate, you got to run when there's a vacancy. And then, of course, Peter Welch decided he would like to run for the Senate. So that opened up his U.S. House seat. And then Molly Gray decided she's the lieutenant governor. She wanted to run for the House seat. So that opened up the lieutenant governor's race. Secretary of State Jim Condos is retiring. Treasurer Beth Pierce is stepping down. And there's a vacancy at Attorney General because former Attorney General T.J. Donovan resigned to take a job in the private sector. So at the statewide level, there are just more contested races than we usually see. I don't think we've seen this many in decades. And at the same time, it's happening at the legislative level. In the House, a majority of committee chairs have decided to retire. I don't know if it's sort of a demographic traffic in the House and Senate at the State House? Or have the COVID sessions taken their toll on people? Because it's been very difficult. But in any case, we have many more legislative vacancies than we usually have. So what happens? People who want to run for the legislature say, hey, there's a vacancy. This is the time to run. So up and down the ticket, we've got lots and lots of contested races, and that should draw a lot of turnout.
And, nope. I just wanted to remind our listeners quickly that there are so many races right now. And if you want to keep an eye on results as they're coming in, you can head over to vermontpublic.org. We have a live blog with, you know, all a place where you can read results from today and also check out some of the voter voices that we heard earlier.
And you can also stick with us. Me and Bob will be live all night until 10 o'clock, bringing you all the latest results if you don't have internet access or you just love staying in touch with me and Bob. So, Bob, as we talk about these this big amount of open seats, what are the big ticket races that you are keeping your eye on tonight?
Well, certainly on the Democratic side, that U.S. House race is very, very important. With Molly Gray, Becca Ballant running there. And I think a lot of people think that that's a very important race for Vermont. The other possibility to look at would be the Republican race for lieutenant governor. Greg Thayer and Joe Benning. The Democratic race for lieutenant governor is also, we've got a number of candidates there. I mean, up and down the ticket, Secretary of State, to pick one out and say it's more important than the other is a little difficult because we're really seeing an opportunity now for people to move into leadership positions, and some of these offices will be stepping stones. But I think a lot of these races have been really good for the state and a really good discussion of issues.
So let's start by talking about the biggest race, the one that I think a lot of eyes are on, this U.S. House on the Democratic side. The big names in that, Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray and Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant, are we would call them the front runners at this point in the campaign. So what can you tell us about the race so far?
You know, it's just been a fascinating race to watch with Molly Gray and Becca Ballant. They bring different experiences to this office. They have been prioritizing their experiences. I think Becca Ballant has come across as perhaps a little more progressive on a number of issues, once has more of a fighting feeling to her. Molly Gray has always talked about getting along with people. You know, if you want to have a good compromise, you've got to work with other people. So we have different approaches there. And I think this has just been a fascinating race to watch and will tell us something about the future of the Democratic Party and how progressive the Democrats are going to be going forward.
Well, Bob, stick with us for a minute here, but I want to turn now to one of our reporters in the field. Henry Epp is at Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray's campaign watch party at the Burlington co-working space Hula. Henry, how's it going over there?
Hey, it's pretty good. How are you?
Good. All right. So what's the vibe at Molly Gray's campaign watch party?
You know, it is pretty quiet so far. I would guess there's maybe 20 people here, a lot of campaign staffers. It's a quiet crowd so far. We'll see if that picks up. They had, planned on starting at 7 o'clock. So the doors have only been open for 25 minutes or so, but pretty quiet.
And Gray has been endorsed over the course of her campaign by some pretty big names in Vermont politics. Who are some of those big name supporters, and do you see any of them there?
Well, to answer that question first, no, I have not seen any of them here yet. She's been endorsed by former Governor Howard Dean, former Governor Madeleine Cunin. She hasn't been endorsed by Congressman Peter Welch or Senator Patrick Leahy, but they have both shown their support for her in different ways, partially financially and sort of in a tacit way, but not explicitly giving her an endorsement. But she has the support of a lot of people who've been really important in Vermont politics for many years.
And Senator Patrick Leahy has also said that he voted for her and donated to her campaign. This has been a pretty heated race at times between Gray and Becca Ballant, and they've had a particular sticking point around campaign finance. What exactly has been the issue there?
Yeah, so the Gray campaign has really pushed this issue into the center of the race for a number of weeks now. Basically, they've taken issue with the fact that a number of out-of-state political action committees have supported Becca Ballant's campaign financially, sending mailers to a lot of folks' houses, that kind of thing. $1.5 million has been spent for Ballant, mostly from a PAC called the LGBTQ Victory Fund. And so the Gray campaign has really taken an issue with that and said, you know, outside groups should not be deciding who Vermonters vote for. It's Vermonters who should be making that decision. The Ballant campaign has really brushed off those attacks. And, you know, it's gotten a little bit ugly at times. It's hard to know, though, how much that resonates with voters. You know, this is a pretty insidery kind right. of thing. But yeah, it has been an issue that the Gray campaign in particular has brought to the fore in the last couple of weeks.
Right. Well, one thing that's been interesting to me to see shift over the course of the campaign is that kind of at the beginning of this campaign, lots of political watchers seem to be talking about how similar Gray and Ballant are in their political values. But over the course of the last few months, Gray seems to really have courted more centrist voters and kind of left that progressive vote to Ballant. Can you tell us a bit more about how the two seem to have moved away from each other along that political spectrum?
Yeah, well, it's not clear that they've, you know, moved away from each other too much on the issues, but in terms of sort of who is supporting them and how they're positioning themselves has really changed. I mean, Becca Ballant has really moved towards the progressives with the endorsement that she received from Senator Bernie Sanders. Molly Gray, meanwhile, has really aligned herself with Patrick Leahy and Congressman Peter Welch. And, you know, I saw an interesting quote that Gray gave to NECN just a couple days ago, in which she said, you know, this election is a choice between, you know, electing another member of the so-called squad in Congress or the, you know, congressional progressive caucus or someone more along the lines of Peter Welch or Patrick Leahy, really aligning herself in what the campaign just told me is the sort of pragmatic lane. When I asked if they were positioning her as a centrist, they said the word that they like is pragmatic. But so that you know, definition and sort of divide between the two candidates has really become clear.
Right. Well, in the past couple of weeks, there have been a couple polls that have showed Gray trailing Ballant a bit. Are you seeing any evidence of that tonight, or does it seem like a hopeful crowd there, or is it just still too early to tell tonight?
I think it's a little too early to tell for sure. I'd like to give it a little more time before we, you know, say whether this is a hopeful vibe here or not. But I think, you know, I asked their campaign communications director about that. And he said, you know, they have internal data. They say their field data shows something different than what we've seen in polls, which have shown Gray significantly behind Becca Ballant. So according to the campaign, they say they have data out there that may show us a different result than what we've been seeing in those polls. Hard to know at this point how that's going to pan out, but that's what we're here to wait and see for.
All right. Well, Henry, enjoy yourself. Hope you have some interesting conversations.
Thank you.
And keep us in the loop throughout the night.
Thanks, Michaela.
That was Vermont Public reporter Henry Epp at the Molly Gray Watch Party in Burlington.
Hopefully that party picks up so he has something to report in the morning.
I know.
I want to bring back on our senior political reporter, Bob Kinzel. Now, Bob, another race that could be really competitive tonight is lieutenant governor on both the Republican and the Democratic side. Let's start with the Democrats, who have a crowded field. We have Kitty Toll, David Zuckerman, Patricia Preston, and Charlie Kimball. What can you tell us?
Well, this is going to be fascinating to see how this turns out. David Zuckerman, who used to be lieutenant governor, was for two terms, then ran for governor and lost in the COVID election of 2020. He served in the Senate for quite a while, also in the House. So he wants to get his job back. Kitty Toll has been representing Danville in the Vermont House since 2008. She's been the chairperson of the House Appropriations Committee. She's got a lot of budget experience. And this really shows, I think, the sort of two sides of the Democratic Party. We were talking about earlier about maybe two sides of the Republican Party. And what we see is two sides of the Democratic Party, maybe a more moderate mainstream approach. That would be Kitty Toll. and maybe the more progressive wing, and that would be David Zuckerman. Also in this race, Representative Charlie Kimball, who has been running from Woodstock since 2016, and also Patricia Preston, who was born and raised in Vermont. And in about 8 years ago, she became the executive director of the Vermont Council on World Affairs. She says, hey, it's time for some new faces, some new blood in the idea at the State House. And so she's running as someone who has not run for office before. So I think most people feel this is coming down to David Zuckerman and Kitty Toll. And it'll be up to a lot of Democrats to decide, are they going to welcome David Zuckerman back into the party after his service? Or are they going to say, you know, it's time to move on and maybe we want to go with somebody else?
And let's talk Republicans here for a moment. Both with the lieutenant governor's race and more broadly with some of these other races, what do you think these Republican races are telling us about the Republican Party right now, particularly around, you know, that split between Trump Republicans and moderate Republicans?
I think these two races, that would be the Republican race for the U.S. Senate and the Republican race for lieutenant governor, are going to tell us a lot about the strength of the Trump wing of the Republican Party in Vermont. Is it pretty strong, as we've seen in other states, or is it really a minority of members of the Republican Party? So in the U.S. Senate race, we've got Christina Nolan, who is a former U.S. attorney. She's talked about the need for political leaders to work together. She's pro-choice. She's been very critical of efforts to defund the police. And she's had some big fundraisers with Maine Senator Susan Collins and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. On the other hand, Gerald Malloy is running against her. He is pro-Trump. He has a long and distinguished military career. He now serves as a business consultant. He wishes that he had attended that January 6th rally down in Washington, but he doesn't think the presidential election was stolen from Trump. But he thinks this his main opponent, Christina Nolan, is way too liberal and much too willing to work with the Democrats. So that's a really interesting race to watch. The other is lieutenant governor, where you've got Caledonia Senator Joe Benning, a six-term senator. He's a moderate mainstream Republican, a lawyer who sits on the Judiciary Committee. He does not like Donald Trump. He says Trump is bad for the future of the Republican Party, and he views this election, his election for lieutenant governor, as a referendum on Trump's role in the GOP. He's running against Gregory Thayer, who is very pro-Trump. He was at the January 6th protest before the insurrection. He agrees with former President Trump that the 2020 presidential election was, in fact, stolen. He is right to life. And so we're going to see with these two races, how many votes do these two candidates who are pro-Trump get in these contests? And will they get close to winning? I don't think anybody really has a firm idea of what's going to happen. A lot of it's going to turn out. A lot of it's going to be affected by turnout. And so that's something we're going to keep a very close watch on tonight.
Speaking of turnout, right now we're in like the single digits of getting those election results back. So the numbers are slowly starting to trickle in. But I want to talk about the governor's race. Both sides, both the Republican and the Democrat, unchallenged. What do you have to say? I mean, we have incumbent Phil Scott running against Brenda Siegel.
Well, I think there are a couple of people who might disagree with you on the governor's side, and that would be Stephen Bellows and also Peter Duvall, who are two Republicans who, in fact, are on the ballot as Republicans. We haven't heard very much from either one of them, so that's probably why a lot of people haven't heard of them. So it's probably, I think, fair to say that Phil Scott is the presumptive GOP candidate and that Brenda Siegel will be the presumptive Democratic candidate, barring some kind of write-in vote. That sets up a really, if that's the way that it works out, and there are many indications that it will set up a really strong contrast for the general election. Brenda Siegel has run for office before. She's made the issue of affordable housing and programs for the homeless a top priority. Also, she's talked a lot about the need to greatly expand substance use treatment programs. She's been very critical of Phil Scott for vetoing paid family leave, for vetoing the climate change bill. So there's a strong contrast between Brenda Siegel and Phil Scott. The problem for Brenda Siegel is that right now, Phil Scott has the highest approval rating of any governor in the country. 74% of people responding to that survey said they approved of what he was doing. And he has more support among Democrats than he does among Republicans. So Brenda Siegel has really got her work cut out for her.
Now, somebody else to talk about who really hasn't gotten a lot of media attention in the primary is H. Brooke Page. And he is running as a Republican, uncontested in several races: Attorney General, Secretary of State, State Treasurer. Bob, what can you tell us about H. Brooke Page and the strategy he's taken?
I can tell you that if he wins Secretary of State, Auditor, Treasurer, and Attorney General, he's going to be one busy person. My understanding is that if he wins more than one office, he has to choose which office he wants to serve in. But there's a strategy behind what H. Brooke Page is doing, and he's done this before. So nobody stepped forward really to run for Secretary of State, Auditor, Treasurer, or Attorney General on the Republican side. So Brooke Page put his name down and got his petitions for it, and he is formally on the ballot. Now, let's say he wins all four races in the Republican primary, which is extremely likely because there's nobody running against him, and we haven't heard of any big votes coming in for a write-in candidate. So after the election, starting tomorrow, H. Brooke Page can decide, do I want to run for all these four offices? I think the answer will be no. And he's going to take an advantage of part of an election law that says if a candidate wins a nomination but chooses not to accept it, that the party committee can caucus and appoint a new candidate. So that's what I think is going to happen here, at least in some of these races. H. Brooke Page will say, well, I'm not really interested in running for attorney general. I'm not interested in running for treasurer. If that happens, the state GOP party has 10 days to meet and to nominate another candidate who can be on the ballot in November. So there's a strategy behind what he's doing, and it's going to help some other people be on the ballot in November.
Now let's check in at the Becca Ballant Watch Party. Let's now turn to one more of our political reporters in the field tonight. State House reporter Peter Hirschfeld is live at 22 High Street in Brattleboro at a Vermont Table Dining and Catering. The watch party for tonight's Democratic nominee for the U.S. House, State Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant. Pete, welcome.
Thank you, Vermont Edition team, for having me.
So, Peter, just give us an understanding of what's the vibe at the watch party today, right now.
So, it's an outdoor party. As you said, this is Becca Ballant has rented out a restaurant here in downtown Brattleboro. It's hot. It's summery. There's definitely a palpable feeling of anticipation here. Dozens of supporters have already shown up. They have pretty high hopes. There's a live band playing. The seltzers are flowing, and there are some people here who are hoping they get a reason to celebrate later tonight.
Now, we know that Becca Ballant was going to make it to one of the polls. Has she made it to the party yet?
She has not arrived here yet. Her campaign manager says they're expecting her shortly, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who are happy to see her when she arrives.
Now, Ballant got some big endorsements. It was on the campaign trail this week and last week with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. How has that helped her attract more voters?
You know, it can be difficult, Connor, to quantify the impact of an endorsement in a political race. That said, if there was one big endorsement to get in this race, it was Bernie Sanders. He's a standard bearer for the progressive left in Vermont, and frankly, the rest of the country. And to the extent that there are voters who want to take their cue from Bernie Sanders, this endorsement matters. I should note, Bernie Sanders didn't simply endorse Becca Ballant. He barnstormed the state with her. A couple weeks ago, they spent a Sunday traveling the state, made stops in Rutland, Montpelier, Burlington. A lot of people came out to see that. So definitely gave Becca Ballant's campaign a boost. Whether that translates to a significant increase in turnout for her or voters saying, you know what, this is going to be the reason why I vote for Becca Ballant is less clear.
Now, we've seen some big polls come out in recent weeks that give Becca Ballen a massive lead over Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray. How has the Ballen campaign used their poll numbers in recent weeks and days to inspire people to vote?
I think, Connor, those poll results can be a little bit of a double-edged sword. On one hand, they've allowed Becca Ballen to assume the posture of front runner, right? To project an image of confidence and control. And I can tell you that since that University of New Hampshire poll came out, Ballen has definitely used it as a rallying cry at campaign events. She's simultaneously, though, trying to maintain a sense of urgency and is pleading with folks not to let those polls dampen their enthusiasm or diminish their efforts on her behalf. And that's for good reason. I've talked to pollsters who say there's some research, though not conclusive, to suggest that polls indicating a preordained outcome can have the effect of depressing voter turnout. That UNH poll had Ballen with a 40 percentage point lead over Molly Gray. It's tough, we should say, to accurately poll where voters are at in a primary that'll likely only attract 25 to 30% of registered voters. That poll also had some real methodological issues, which should give rise to concern over the accuracy of the results. I don't think anyone who's followed this race think it's the runaway that the UNH poll suggested.
Now, excuse me. Now, outside spending seems to be what the Gray campaign has used as their ticket to make the case that Ballen is not the right person to represent Vermonters. How has the Ballen campaign responded to these attacks?
So, Becca Ballen has railed against super PACs. She's railed against the influence of outside money in elections. But in this particular instance, she's sort of saying, look, you can hate the game. You can hate the super PAC game, but don't hate the player in this case. The two PACs that have spent heaviest on Ballen's campaign are the LGBTQ Victory Fund and the Equality Fund. Both of these groups exist to support candidates that are going to advance and promote an LGBTQ rights agenda. Becca Ballen says it's irresponsible to conflate those kinds of independent expenditure PACs with the ones that are designed to advance more craven agendas, let's say. There are a lot of liberal politicians who think Citizens United is a scourge on democracy. They also say that if the left doesn't use the tools that Citizens United created, i.e. super PACs, then they lose the fight before it starts. And while Becca Ballen has lamented the existence of super PACs, lamented the existence of independent expenditures, she's taken real pains to distinguish between the ones that are supporting her and the ones that support Donald Trump, for example.
Now, this might be a hard question for you to answer, but are there other concerns when it comes to the job Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballen would do as a congressperson representing Vermont?
You know, during the final debate between the candidates on WCAX last week, Molly Gray kind of went after Ballen over her support for the decriminalization of all illicit drugs. Gray said drugs like methamphetamine and opioids are addictive and lethal and intimated that it was irresponsible on Ballen's part to support their decriminalization. But there isn't a widespread narrative related to Ballen's prospective inability to govern effectively in Congress. And many of the people who support her say it's the way she works with other lawmakers, the way she's able to collaborate and communicate with people across the aisle. That's the reason they think she'd be such an asset in Washington, D.C. As Senate President, Ballen had to negotiate complex policy initiatives in ways that, on occasion, needed to win the buy-in of people from a different party. Polarization in Congress is something that a lot of people are concerned about, obviously. And there are people who support Becca Ballen precisely because they think her brand of politics is what's needed to bring down tensions in Washington.
And Peter, how is the Ballen campaign talking about the future? We hear the music, so I hope that people are happy, but is tonight about celebrating and looking towards November, or is tonight really for them watching the polls?
So I think for the Ballen campaign and for the Gray campaign, for that matter, tonight is the night that they're concerned about most, from an electoral perspective at least. We're not going to call the outcome of the November election tonight, Connor, but by all relevant metrics, Becca Ballen, if she wins, has the wind at her sails. She has far more financial support than Republicans running in the GOP primary for U.S. House. She has better field organization. She has better name recognition. It's also worth noting that Vermont hasn't sent a Republican to Congress since Peter Smith was elected in 1989. So that's more than 30 years ago now. I think it's perhaps, you know, going out on a limb to say that the primary functions as the general in this instance, but it would be shocking to say the least if Vermont didn't send a Democrat to replace Peter Welch in the U.S. House of Representatives.
That's Vermont Public State House reporter Peter Hirschfeld. Pete, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
All right, we still have Bob Kinzel on the line with us. Bob, what do you think hearing both of those dispatches from the Gray watch party and the Ballant watch party?
I think it reflects pretty much what we've seen in the campaign for the last couple of weeks and how the two candidates have tried to differentiate themselves. I think, as you mentioned earlier, there was a time when most people felt, well, there's not that big a difference between Molly Gray and Becca Ballant, but there really is a difference in style, and I think that that's come through our reporting this evening.
Now, I know a lot of people have been watching the Democratic primary for the U.S. House very closely. There's obviously a lot of interest on both sides of the aisle about who voters want to send to Washington. And again, this race could produce Vermont's first female representative to Washington. But I also want to talk about what this primary night means for the State House in Montpelier. What are you keeping an eye on there?
The big eye on a lot of different races where there are vacancies and you have a lot of new people running for office. I also wonder, up in Chittenden County, reapportionment this year made a huge difference in Chittenden County. And I wonder if there are some voters walking around Chittenden County wondering what district they're in. Just to clarify that, previously, the Chittenden County Senate District had 6 members representing over 100,000 people. It was the largest Senate district in the country. Nobody even comes close to that. And for years, people have talked about, you know, we got to make this smaller. It's just too difficult for state senators to represent that large a geographic area. So in reapportionment this year, 2 things happened. One, a state Senate seat was moved from Caledonia County over to Chittenden County, and the 6-member Chittenden district was divided in half. So there are 2 3-member districts. So altogether now we're going to have 7 members from Chittenden County. So I have to believe that there were some people who are now in the so-called Chittenden Central District who were wondering, where do I go and who are the people who are on the ballot? It had to be very confusing for them. But it's a big, big change for Chittenden County. There are a couple of retirements of the incumbents up in Chittenden County. And so there are going to be some new people representing Chittenden County in the state Senate come January, as well as several other parts of the state. So there's going to be a lot of new blood in the State House when the session opens in 2023.
Speaking of new blood, what does this mean for Montpelier to see all this change? Are we going to see Montpelier shift to a more progressive or less progressive place?
I think the jury is really out on that one. It depends so much on who gets elected. There's going to be new leadership in the Senate because Becca Ballant is going to be not seeking re-election, obviously, and Molly Gray, so they're gone. Over in the House, when you've got, I think, 8 of the 14 committee chair people retiring, you're going to bring a lot of new people into leadership positions. So it may take a while for both the House and the Senate to kind of settle in and have a sense of direction of where they want to go.
Now, Bob, Mike Pichek, who ran unopposed, is claiming victory in the Democratic nomination for the Vermont treasurer. Now, listeners, you'll recognize Pichek's name because he was the state's top insurance and banking regulator and running the state's COVID modeling. In a statement released this evening, Pichek said, quote, "It's an honor to win the Democratic nomination for treasurer. Pichek will face GOP candidate H. Paige Brooks and progressive Don Schramm in November. The winner will replace longtime state treasurer Beth Pierce." Now, Bob, what do you make of that?
Well, it's probably very expected that Mike Pichek was going to be able to win that race since he was basically unopposed. And it sets up a very kind of strange general election fight because we don't know if it's going to be H. Brooke Page in that race or not. As we were discussing earlier, Brooke Page could say, you know, I don't want to run for treasurer. Let's let the Republican State Committee choose someone to take my place. And who knows who that will be. So it's a kind of a cloudy picture right now. But I have to believe that Mike Pecek feels like he's in good shape.
And some other races that we want to look at, you know, we talked about the treasurer's office. Anything else that you are expecting to get calls on early?
I think there are going to be a couple of races that are going to be too close to call for a while, and that might be the Democratic race for Attorney General with Charity Clark and Rory Thibault, and also the Democratic race for Secretary of State, where you've got Sarah Copeland-Hanzus, who is the chairperson of the House Government Operations Committee, Chris Winters, who currently serves as Deputy Secretary of State and has the endorsement of his boss, Jim Condos, and also John Odom, who's been city clerk in Montpelier for the past 10 years. That's a case where I think they all have pretty similar policy ideas, but they have very different experience. Sarah Copeland-Hanzus coming from the legislature, John Odom representing Montpelier as a city clerk, and of course, Chris Winters being in the Secretary of State's office. So the different experiences and backgrounds that they have will probably affect how they develop policies in office. And I think both those races are going to be quite close.
Now, we are going to be keeping track of the results as they roll in throughout the night. Bob, you and Connor are going to be on tap for the next couple of hours doing that for us. But, you know, there's a couple larger counties that could really, you know, sway these results one way or the other. The ones that, you know, we're not going to call anything until we hear from them. Can you kind of talk us through that process?
Sure. On the Democratic side, I would think if you could add up the votes in Chittenden County, Washington County, Windsor County, and Windham County, those four counties, the results of those four counties will pretty much mirror what happens statewide. It's a strong Democratic vote in each of those four counties. And on the Republican side, I think I'd take a look at what happens in Bennington County, what happens in Rutland County, what happens in Franklin County, and to a lesser degree, what happens in Caledonia and Essex-Orleans just because the number of voters aren't there, but also perhaps part of Washington County. So I'll be watching those counties this evening.
Bob, we just have you for 1 minute. I want to know, I just want to get your take on what makes you the most excited about primary day and just being a reporter and being able to, listen to these stories and report on this.
I think it's a combination, Connor, of seeing lots of new people running for office. I find that to be very exciting, that different people are going to come in. They've got different ideas. They've got different leadership styles. And that's what makes democracy so vibrant. And I really loved hearing the voices at the beginning of the program tonight of people who are invested in this democratic form of government. They're excited about this election. They see hope here. I think you mentioned hope a couple of times early in the program. Just to feel that hope is a very optimistic thing.
Well, that's senior political reporter Bob Kinzel. Bob, thanks for your expertise, and we will chat later next hour.
My pleasure.
Michaela, it's been a wonderful ride with you talking about the primaries and everything that we have going on. And as always, I just love co-hosting with you.
Yeah, this has been great. Good luck in the next couple hours.
Thanks. Today's show was directed by Mary Angish. Music was by Erica Wazen and the New Trombones Collective. It was produced by Matthew Smith. Thank you to all the Vermont Public reporters who spoke to Vermonters today on this primary day. I'm Connor Cyrus.
And I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch up again soon.